As we enter into our time together, put away the pressures of the world that ask us to perform, to take up masks, to put on brave fronts. Silence the voices that ask you to be perfect. This is a community of compassion and welcoming. You do not have to do anything to earn the love contained within these walls. You do not have to be braver, smarter, stronger, better than you are in this moment to belong here with us. You only have to bring the gift of your body, no matter how able, your seeking mind, no matter how busy, your animal heart, no matter how broken. Bring all that you are and all that you love to this hour together. Good morning, everyone. We would especially like to offer a very warm welcome to the visitors and guests this morning. Let's all take a moment to welcome one another by greeting those around you. I would like to draw your attention. I would like to draw your attention to the announcements in the order of the service today. I also have one last minute announcement that I've been asked to share with you. Kim Bellinger and Tom Manny will be taking pictures October 1st and 2nd to update our fellowship directory. If you are not in the current directory, please sign up this Sunday or next Sunday for a scheduled time. I invite you to relax and ease into a contemplative state. Be simultaneously aware of yourself as an individual, as well as an active participant of this community. We light this chalice today as a symbol of our unity and resilience as a community of people with shared values evolving together on this sacred ground. Please rise as you are willing and able for our opening hymn, number 145, As Tranquil Streams. Hymn number 145. I'd like to invite all the children to come forward for our Story of All Ages activity today.
Good morning. Hi, guys. Come on up, Berg. So how is everybody today? Hi, Owen. Cool. Well, today in our service, you guys are going to miss it because you guys are going to be doing your really fun stuff back in your classrooms, but we're going to talk about something called community. Has anybody ever heard that word before? You have? What do you think it means, Carrie? Big group of people? Yeah, it is a big group of people. Does anybody have any other ideas? There's kind of lots of ideas about what community is. Do you have any ideas, Sam? No? Kaya, what do you think it is?
What she said.
What she said? Yeah. It is a big group of people, or a small group. William, what do you think?
A big town, too.
That's right. What do you think, Sam?
A big city?
Yeah, it could be a big city. Burke, what do you think? Or a small town, right? What do you think, Carrie?
A community is like a town or a city that all works together.
Yeah, a town or a city that works together. It's a group of people that tends to work together. They might live close together. What else, Kaya? You don't know. Well, those were all really good ideas, and that is pretty much what a community is. It's a group of people that might live together or work together, or maybe a group of people that likes to do the same things, or they might believe the same things. What else, Leah? A group of people that keeps people safe from thunderstorms, right. You tend to feel safe when you're in your community, right? That is part of it. So there's some communities that you might feel stronger in some of your communities. Like you might feel like you care more about certain things. Like, let's see, has anybody ever been to story time at the library? Anybody? I bet Owen has been to story time at the library before. Well, that can be a community. But what if you went to story time every week and you never talked to anybody? And you went every week, but you didn't know anybody's name, and you never talked to anybody, and you never looked at anybody, and you didn't ever look at the librarian, you just listened and then you left. You wouldn't really probably care about the people that were there that much, right? But what if, Burke, what if you started going and you started talking to the kids and you said, oh, your name is Nick? Oh, and then you started playing and then you said, oh, Sam, oh, I like you too. Hold on. And then you kind of made friends with the people that were there every week. And then you got to know what the librarian looked like and what her name was. Do you think maybe you'd start to care about them more?
Yes.
Yeah, and then that would be kind of a stronger community, right? Because you'd care about the people more. What do you want to say, Burke? You forgot. Okay. So we all belong to lots of communities, I think. What kinds of communities? Are there any other kinds that we didn't talk about that anybody can think of besides a town or a city or a library? Nick?
A church.
A church, yeah. That's a good one. Indigo? A school. Right. Kaya?
A house,
right. If you live together in a house, your family is a small community, right? William?
Cars.
If you're in a car with someone, I guess that could be kind of a little community. Lauren? An apartment, right? In your little apartment or the whole apartment building? Or a hotel, right? Burke? If you're protected from a tornado? In a shelter. Oh, right. That's a good one. Sam? In the ocean? A community of fish. That's a good one. Leah? Yeah. Keeping us safe is a big part of it. Okay, one more. Carrie?
A mall.
Right. Maybe not if you're just shopping there so much, but if you're working there, then you're with all these people that you work with, and that's kind of your community, right? So, okay, we're going to do a little activity, and we're going to see that you guys might belong to different communities. So let's kind of see what kinds of communities you guys might belong to. So I'm going to give a couple examples. So, okay, we're going to make you guys stand up again. So everybody stand up. Now this is what we're going to do. I'm going to name a couple different kinds of activities or communities that you might belong to, okay? So if you belong to the first one, I want you to come and stand right here together in a little circle, like a little group. If anybody has ever played soccer, like in a team or a club or something, I want you to stand right here. And then I want you to stay right there. Kind of all together. You don't have to stand in a line. Oh, wow, that's a lot. So you guys belong to like a community on a team, right? A soccer team or a soccer club? That's awesome.
Well, I play with my friends.
That's fine. All right. If anybody, now I want you guys to stay there, even if you belong to this one too. Has anybody ever shopped at the farmer's market before? If any of you guys have, I want you to stand right here.
I have.
Oh, you have? Well, now, I want you to join Sam's group, the Farmers Market group, by reaching your hand out, so you're kind of connecting to their group. So you're part of that group, too, right? Let's see what else. If anybody has ever taken music lessons, has anybody here ever taken music lessons? Has anybody ever gone to a church? Yes, if you have, go stand right here. And if anybody here has ever gone to a church, or maybe if you're at one right now, you can reach out and you can touch their group. Do you want to come stand up here? So, see, you guys can be part of lots of different communities. You might not be in the same one, but we're all in that same one right now, right? All right, you guys have fun in your classes today.
Now is the time in our service when we recognize the joys and sorrows of members within our community. If you have a significant joy or sorrow you would like to share, please raise your hand.
I'm Sylvia Beeman, and I'm head of the grounds committee. But not the building. But we had work day yesterday, and a very small group of people came, but we did tons of work. So once Mark Mosher told me, we have this beautiful building, and so we should be happy to take care of it. And I remind myself of that when I'm whining at my house that I had to do housework. So I really agree with him. And if anyone missed out and would still like to do something, you can maybe help me move that enormous pile of brush down by the road. Somebody has a brilliant idea of how to get that over to the dump. So thank you for everybody who came and brought food and worked.
I have a new pickup, so I'll go by the road. I worked at my house because I was obligated to. My wife wanted me to.
I'd just like to say that I lost my husband 2 weeks ago. We've been married 31 years. It's a more of a happy, sad thing. Sad that I'll miss him. Everyone around us will miss him. But he's in heaven, and that's the main important thing.
Inel Forrester, and I just have had some scary news, but it turned out all right. The airplane crash in Vegas from the air show. My daughter-in-law, Beth, both brothers go to these shows, and they support one of the airplane flyers, but that was not their team. But they were not in the stands. They were in the pit. So they were okay. So that was sort of a joy that they were okay. But a sadness for those that did not survive.
As a compassionate and empathetic community, let us acknowledge those joys that were and sorrows that were spoken, as well as those that were unspoken. This fellowship relies on the continuing contributions of its members to support the programs, act upon shared values, and sustain a sacred place for the evolution and growth of this community. We will now take the offering.
Good morning. I'm Elke Lorenz, and I will start this program talking a little bit about community and values, followed by, Bryce Holbrook talking about the children in our fellowship, and then Blake about this place as a whole. So this program originally intended to cover in more detail the pulse of the congregation as determined by a survey conducted by the Long Range Planning Committee. A slight change in program became necessary, but I would like to take the opportunity to thank Michael Oldfather for his leadership in the Long Range Planning Committee, guiding us in the development of the membership survey, and for tabulating and interpreting its results. To want to find out what our members and friends think about many aspects of fellowship life and taking the findings seriously is an important part of the democratic process in which we believe. I will start with a reading by Victoria Weinstein in a slightly adapted wording. Her church uses it to welcome their new members, and I believe that it describes what many of us seek in this fellowship. We hope that as members and friends of this congregation, you will allow yourselves to know and to become known, to minister to and to be ministered unto, to love and to be loved by this congregation. We never really know what combination of fate and friendship and good luck it is that brings certain people together in this world for any purpose. But we believe that membership in the fellowship calls each of us here to celebrate the fate that has drawn us together and to regard each one as a spiritual friend and a potential teacher, even of occasionally hard lessons. The relationships we form in our fellowship are based on needs of the soul, needs that render each of us vulnerable and therefore reliant on each other's grace and goodness and generosity of spirit. As members of this fellowship, we strive to be guardians of each other's spirits, to respect the ultimate privacy of each one's human struggle, and to believe in each one's inherent dignity. In the bonds of fellowship, we unite to promote spiritual growth and ethical commitment, to minister to each other's needs and to those of humanity, to celebrate the sacred moments of life's passage, and to honor the holiness at the heart of being. I have been a member of this fellowship for 9 years, and being a part of this community has made a huge difference in my life. Before moving to Manhattan, I was agonized over my younger son's disability, my job search, and my professional frustrations, pretty much in isolation, and yes, often in fear. It made me sick to the breaking point, and I did not understand how I could end up in such a difficult state when I was used to taking care of myself and my children with both feet pretty much on the ground. Sorry. I learned that we can cope with one challenge in our lives relatively unharmed, that a second challenge can shake us up considerably, and that a third one can lift us off our foundation rather seriously, especially when dealing with life's challenges on one's own. When I moved to Manhattan to start my job at Manhattan High School, I knew that I would need a community. Sorry, I thought I would do much better. To get back on my feet, and chose UUFM, the first religious organization I have joined since I was a teenager. I want to thank all of you for playing such an important role in my life. for entrusting me with leadership roles over the years and for making me feel as a part of this community. Okay, now I'm good. Our recent survey among fellowship members showed that a sense of community, spiritual inspiration, intellectual growth, and friendship is very important to all of us meeting here on Sunday mornings and often during other times of the week in support of work of the work that this congregation does. The Sunday program gives structure to our weekend and structure to our week. It keeps us grounded in our values of moral and ethical living we strive to adhere to in our families, in our work, in our volunteer work inside and outside the fellowship, and with our circles of friends within and without our own spiritual home. Members meet to plan for Sunday programs and the music therein. Sunday programs, for many of us, are the most important aspect of fellowship life, or fellowship life that takes careful planning on a continuous basis, especially in an organization with so many lay-led programs. Members also meet to plan for special events that involve meals, where we can share companionship during holidays and other special times of the year, and that many of us enjoy very much, even if there is a lot of dishes to do afterwards. Members meet to make sure that the needs of our frailer friends or friends who are in an acute crisis are met. While most of us are proud in taking care of ourselves and our own needs, it is inevitable that each of us sooner or later will find ourselves in a crisis situation, be it sickness or loss of a family member or friend or other tragedies. None of us will have to meet a great challenge alone, which will make any challenge, hopefully, a little bit more bearable. Knowing that we will not be alone should we be faced with tragedy is comforting, even during a time of calm and bliss. Members of a non-traditional church also have the urge to celebrate life's traditions, transitions. For example, we want to have our children and grandchildren acknowledged, just like our marriages and the marriages of our children. These are basic human needs that can be fulfilled in less traditional ways, but meaningfully acknowledged nonetheless in this community. Members meet to determine how we can best be of service to the community and then follow through by serving at the community breakfast, donating to the Helping Hand Sunday, and giving time and money to many different causes through the fellowship and other venues, too many to even begin to mention here. We cannot underestimate that our religious community needs leadership and needs the funds that it takes to maintain this place and to pay for our staff that we are fortunate to have. Just like a family or a single-person household, we have a budget to which we have to adhere to in order to remain solvent and to meet our financial obligations. That takes prior planning and setting of priorities and people who are willing to do this in a responsible and forward-looking manner. Even so, it is not the most spiritual aspect of fellowship life. As all of us in our personal lives, this organization needs good health and the means to support itself to be able to focus on its wider goals. The executive board, with input from many committees, steers us in a direction of growth in vision, spirit, and numbers. Of course, and for some people, perhaps most importantly, we should not underestimate the friendships that are formed here, the many gatherings taking place for companionship, be it for a card game, get the children together, have a cup of coffee to talk over a problem, read a book, work on crafts, discuss current events, practice some music, or meet for lunch or dinner. We all know that a sense of belonging and being in touch with one's emotions and spiritual needs can prolong life and promote better health, and that having friends from all walks of life, all age groups, different life experiences, and yes, varying viewpoints broadens our horizons. All people want to belong to a group. It is part of our human condition. We cannot survive on our own. Traditionally, churches have given people a sense of belonging and community. Being a non-mainstream church is no exception to this. Now, Bryce Hopebrook will talk about the important role our children play in the vitality and future of this community.
Well, when we talk about strengthening communities, as the children certainly demonstrated to us this morning, it is necessary to talk about their children and the role that they play and our obligation as a community to provide them with the support that they need to become happy, productive adults and capable of passing along the most desirable traits of human culture to their own children. I had intended to read from an essay written in 1890 by my maternal grandfather, someone that I did not know, but he seemed to be a very literate man in the work that he left behind. On a Saturday morning of June 13th, 1890, he wrote this very lengthy essay on the subject of Children's Day. And I can't imagine why anyone of his age, he was 19 at the time, on a Saturday morning would be writing an essay, but it's an excellent piece, but only a small amount of it applies here, so I'll just read from it. Kind friends, today we celebrate with and for the children. Let me draw your mind for a time to a place which is most important to children, and that is the community. Important because it is the place where their very characters are molded and therefore determine their usefulness and happiness in this life. My grandfather was a student at Stockton Academy, which was a secondary school founded in 1887 and, quote, the only Christian academy in northwest Kansas west of Mitchell County, Mitchell County being Beloit. It is a New England academy of the West. Trustees elected by the Congregational Churches of Northwest Kansas. The principal is a graduate of Phillips Andover Academy and Amherst College. So you compare this to even the founding of Kansas State University, which had aspirations of people from those areas in around Boston and New York at the time. We must realize how important children are to our community. If we do not pay attention to that, we become a community of cranky adults. And our future is uncertain, possibly very much like the Shakers, who were a conservative religious community in the 19th century, depended upon recruitment of adults who possibly had children, but beyond that, they were celibate and only acquired indentured children and orphans as a means of furthering their membership. Well, the last time I looked at the seven principles, celibacy was not one of those, those requirements. Well, humans are a very unique species. Homo sapiens, Latin for wise or knowing man, is the only living species of the Homo genus of bipedal primates of the great ape family. Think about that a minute. Bipedal, we're the only ones who walk on 2 feet. Anatomically, modern humans originated in Africa about 200,000 years ago, reached behavioral modernity about 50,000 years ago, and really only came to develop communities about 10,000 years ago with the appearance of agriculture. Formerly, humans, hunter-gatherers, small groups, foraging for themselves in the countryside, agriculture was developed and community began to develop. Defined, of course, by others as the bringing together of people for mutual benefit in order that they might survive. Well, humans are a unique species. Look at human children compared to other mammal children. Humans require a long time for development. They are born helpless, and they must be nurtured by family and community for many, many years. Well, if you talk to a modern parent, why 25 years or almost never is the time that it takes to raise a child, there are many other factors of what they can do before they reach the age of 25. At any rate, considering the hazards of the environment in past millennia, modern humans survive through advanced tool making, adaptation to the environment, and the development of culture and community that supported the common good. Part of the material I've used here today was taken from Marion Wright Edelman, who is the founder of the Children's Defense Fund, and I also have another quote from her. "Today, the gap between the rich and the poor in the United States is the greatest ever recorded, larger than any other industrialized nation. It has been far too easy to ignore the hardships of children plagued by poverty, poor health, illiteracy, violence, adult hypocrisy, and injustice." Well, if you've been reading the newspapers over the last week to 10 days about the poverty rates rising in the United States to possibly in Kansas 14%, 17% across the country, and hunger experienced by children. One in six children goes to bed hungry in the United States at this time. But these are really difficult things for us to consider, and we must all know what we truly value and how can we build a community that is fit for the children and to be sure that they have what they need. Marion Wright Edelman, I have paraphrased something that she has written here. "Children must have role models, positive and authentic adults who can challenge our cultural addictions to power, money, celebrity, violence, as well as obsessive materialism and individualism. They need to see adults who can teach them how to deal with complexity, to think about the long and short-term consequences of their actions, to bounce back from failure, to ask the right questions, solve problems, sort out reams of information gained from the proliferation of electronic and personal media, make informed judgments, take effective action, sacrifice to the common good, and listen to the principles and prophets of the great human legacy that dwells within each individual." Well, that says a lot about contemporary society, and it leads us to how we must value community, the ripples that start within the family and come to our community and ripple throughout the world to the entire human family. Well, the good thing is we can provide some of the role models to our children here at UUFM and many other things. Number one, we can provide an ethical point of view that allows our children in this community, our community, to develop tolerance for the views of others and those that are different from us. We can inform our children about the dangers that rampant abuse of natural resources have on the earth, our only home, and how that abuse of air, water, and soil can lead to the decline of the human species. We can teach our children to be aware of their broader community, their nation, and the world, and the collective necessity to provide leadership to make our lives safer for everyone. We can instill in our children the necessity to fight for justice, to see that others are not denied the rights of health, food, housing, economic security, and a secure old age. We can supplement here the educational opportunities provided by parents, peers, and schools, supplying alternative points of view, critical thinking, and about not accepting information as dogma or truth. We can contribute to our child's curiosity, a passion for learning, surpassing other failures to inspire when they are young and fresh. We are a community of safe passage and place, as difficult as it is to instill a sense of safety in a very threatening world. We here contribute to the security needed by the vulnerable children. It takes a community to provide child safety, however. Otherwise, it would be like some homes and communities in other parts of the world that I have seen, where homes are fortresses with barbed wire around the top of the wall, and children cannot move freely, learning and gaining new experiences by interacting with others. It is very important that any community be diverse in terms of age and include children. We can think of many examples of where we have grown apart from including children and all ages in community. I don't mean to disparage retirement communities in any way, but one of the things that people often mention is that the absence of children is a problem. Shirley's mother in Sun City, Arizona, for 25 years, where anyone under the age of 50 cannot live there, and where she often said, "The thing I really hate about this place is that there aren't any children around." And we need to be really careful about that. Well, what do we do here? I'll conclude by saying that we can strengthen the UUFM community as individuals for our children. Number one, respect the children. Value them as important members of this community. Include them in conversations when we are in groups. And listen to them with respect and take their opinions seriously. Communicate with the children. It's not just the DREs and the teacher's job in our classes. It's every one of us who have an obligation to communicate and interact with their children. You won't be disappointed if you do take the effort to interact with a child. Create a climate of safety. We have to think about that here. Safety in the child's play, whether some activity might cause them to be injured, and certainly to protect them from the dangers of the environment. Listen to their feelings. They need a lot of attention or they'll act out. Don't ignore them. Make sure that they have authentic information, and help parents maintain good nutrition by not offering unhealthy snacks. Child care. Think of mega churches that are succeeding in this country to a very large extent. They offer community and community for the whole family, maybe the only community that some people have. Well, I will conclude by saying each of us can be a vital force in strengthening this community for the sake of our children. Don't be reluctant to involve yourself. You have many experiences and the wisdom to contribute on behalf of our children.
I would like to ask all of you to close your eyes. Think about a time in your life when you experienced a strong feeling of community. Visualize that moment. What do you remember? You probably remember the people you were with, the events that were transpiring. You also probably remember the mood, maybe the temperature, the time of year, and you also probably remember the place, the building you were in, and the room you were in. If you were outside, you probably remember the sky, the trees, the ground, the wind. All of our experiences occur somewhere. Places are therefore the setting for our experiences, our memories of the past, and our visions of the future. Okay, you can open your eyes. The idea that our lives occur in places seems obvious, it seems self-evident, and we probably all take it for granted to some extent. But let's think about this for a minute, because after all, living here in the United States during this time, there are a lot of places that probably aren't really worth remembering. For example, the parking lot at Staples, or the parking lot at the mall, or the loading dock at Walmart. These types of environments contribute to what many scholars, particularly those studying phenomenology, call the crisis of placelessness. Indeed, parking lots and big box walls and loading docks are places, they're technically places in the spatial sense, and as they exist in space and they can be occupied. But these might better be described as spaces. The difference between space and place is that places are cared about and they're valued by a community. In order for a space to become a place, it must be embedded with meaning and significance by people over time. So when I use the word place, it is meant to evoke types of places we choose to spend our time and the places we choose to care about. We should not strive to make spaces, we should strive to make places. Edward Rolfe writes about this distinction and the importance of place. Although place is closely related to space, its experiential dimension is qualitatively different from that of space. The latter is part of any immediate encounter with the world. So as long as I can see, I cannot help but see it, no matter what my purpose. It is not so with places, for they are constructed in the memories and affections through repeated encounters and complex associations. Place experiences are necessarily time-deepened and memory-qualified. In geographical experience, place is an origin. It is where one knows others and is known to others. It is where one comes from, and it is one's own. Before any choice, there is this place where the foundations of earthly existence and human condition establish themselves. We can change locations, move, but this is still to look for a place. We need a base to set down our being and to realize our possibilities, a here from which to discover the world, a there to which we can return. Geographical experience begins in places and reaches out across spaces to landscapes and the regions of existence. Specifically, it begins in the place in which I live as the center of my world, though there may be other places which serve as foci of meaning for me. Belonging to a place, feeling part of it, gives many people a positive sensation of security. Yet for others, it may be oppressive and restrictive. Whether we know places with a deep affection or merely as a stopping point in the passage of our lives, they are set apart in time and space because they have distinct meaning for us. So, the types of places we choose to spend our time, the types of places we have concern about, the types of places we spend our Saturdays working hard at, these are the places that in large part define the meaning of our lives. We need places for community, and we need quality places for community. We need a variety of types of places for community. Indoors, outdoors, places for sitting, places for standing, places for running. We need democratic places together to gather as a community, and we need places to demonstrate and voice our opinions. And we need places not just for occupation, but we need places for appropriation. Any space can be occupied, but the act of appropriating, the act of claiming a space for community, imbues it with deeper meaning. Earlier, I was talking about parking lots and their role in the crisis of placelessness. Parking lots are not inherently good or bad. These places have utility. People have to park their cars at a strip center, and they have to load deliveries at Walmart. So you need a loading dock. But let's not confuse appropriation here, or let's not confuse mere occupation with appropriation. So let's consider a different parking lot for a minute. The one at the corner of Humboldt and Fifth Street, which I bet a lot of you know. It's the site of the Saturday Farmers Market. In many ways, it's not that different from any other parking lot in town. It's made of asphalt. It has stripes. It's not very pretty. It doesn't have any shade. And people park their cars there. It's banal. It's every day in every way. But the activity of the farmers market transforms this space into a place. The ritual, the relationships that are built there, and the shared values of that farmers market community and the people that appropriate each week give it a shared meaning to many, many people here in the Manhattan community. It only happens once a week, and it's only part of the year, but this act of appropriation changes the overall meaning of this place for many, many people. I know it's certainly the case for our family. When we drive by that place, my daughter doesn't say, "Oh, Daddy, there's the parking lot." She says, "There's the farmer's market." Even if it's a Thursday afternoon and nothing's going on there, that place is the farmer's market. So it has been appropriated by the farmer's market community, and it has meaning to people. Kimberly W. writes, "Appropriation is a difficult yet vital notion, since it embodies the dual qualities of both caring for the world and taking from it. As caring, appropriation speaks of our primary involvement in the world, our concern. This caring or concern is not a moral attitude, rather it is a fundamental aspect of existence. Furthermore, appropriation is more than just a utilitarian concern. It involves a respect and preserving of the world in its own right. It is through this care that the world is disclosed. A second part of appropriation is the notion of taking. So first there's caring, and then there's taking. Taking is close to the etymological root as seen in the Latin appropriare, to make one's own. Taking, in this sense, is a kind of incorporation of the world into ourselves. As our world discloses itself through our concern, we take this disclosure into our being. Appropriation is closely related to the process of identification. As we open ourselves to the world of things and places, we bring them meaning through our care and concern, and at the same time, these things and places lend meaning to our sense of identity, and in this case, our shared sense of identity. Appropriation is rooted, therefore, in a concerned action through which we appropriate aspects of our world as anchors of our self-identity. The importance of this concept of appropriation for the understanding of authenticity lies in this emergence of meaning through action. The farmer's market wouldn't be the farmer's market if it wasn't acted upon. Our successive appropriations and identifications from past experience form a kind of ontological ground of meaning. Inasmuch as experience is culturally shared, so are these meanings. This fellowship has, in many ways, great places for community. We have many great places for gathering. We have this wonderful sanctuary, which serves us for our services, musical events, drumming circles. We have the old sanctuary for community meals, which occur almost every week, sometimes more than once a week. It serves us for ping pong, tournaments, dance classes, and committee meetings. We have wonderful RE classrooms for the children's RE education. We have a trail through the woods with wildflowers and trees. We have a sledding hill, and we have a fire ring. All of these places here serve as the infrastructure that facilitates community for our members, our friends, and guests. It gives us a here from which to discover the world, a there to which we can return. It is a focus of meaning for us and provides us with a positive sensation of security. Through our collective concerned action, we have appropriated this place as an anchor for our shared sense of self-identity. It is with deep appreciation for this place that I celebrate the community we have here, in this place, in our place, in the world. I would now like to open the floor and invite all of you to share ways in which you have contributed to strengthening community, or perhaps to share your thoughts about why this community is important to you.
One word, friendship.
Anna Franklin. Well, of course, friendship, yes. It's wonderful to have a community of people of all different ages, and it's great to have the children. But it's also the place where my daughter got married. There's so many of you that took part in helping that to happen, and where the big oak tree is, and where the hill is that I love to climb, and where we have drumming with Pat Ambers, and, you know, I don't know what I'd do without it. I'm single, I live alone, so this is where I come to see people. Thank you.
Well, I'm going to depart a little bit from your question and describe a community that was a surprise and a real inspiration to me. During the 90s, I lived and worked in Romania and took care of children in institutions, some of them quite dreadful. And the one that was called the Auschwitz of Romania and was appropriately named contained a group of children who grew to mean a great deal to me. And these were children who survived, where 75% of the people who were incarcerated there died during the first two winters. These are children who, some of them had very, almost nothing wrong with them. They had no medical care, very little food. They had no heat, and very few blankets. And some of them managed to survive, and they survived because they formed their own community. And I tried to do a little a scientific look at it. There were three reasons that these kids survived, and they were delightful kids. One was mobility. The children who could move around tended to survive longer. Another was a rather peculiar observation, was what I called creativity. Children who could make up a story, could sing a song, and who could make plans, and inevitably became leaders, and they were more likely to survive. But by and far the winner was friendship. And despite the fact that these kids were segregated by age, they formed their own surrogate families, they shared experiences, they protected each other, and they comforted each other. And so I think all of you have said friendship, and I think that won the day in Romania, and that community has been an inspiration to me.
Thank you.
Can't I have it? Why can't I have it?
excuse me. You mentioned places, and you did a good job, except you forgot the Memorial Garden, which a lot of you probably don't even know it exists. If you climb up the hill, if you have the strength, you can someday inter your ashes there, which some people have, and you can be a member of the community for a long time.
Thank you.
Oh, I don't mind.
My name's Pat Embers, and I've been with this fellowship, since 1987, I think, or earlier, I'm not sure. Anyway, you know, been through a lot of changes and new buildings and everything. I've always felt a sense of community here, and I think that one thing that wasn't mentioned here is so far is the community that we portray to other people in the community. Because, you know, people, even through the website, I mean, people come here because they found us on the website. And maybe they were looking for the principles and the ways we believe and look at things. But I'm wondering, you know, if there isn't that sense of community somehow gathered from that, and then when they come, they see that. I mean, I've heard this from different new people. And then the sense of community in the drum circle, I mean, we had 30 people here the other night for the 10 billion beats drumming, and I want to say I'm sorry for all the smudging that got. I know that we didn't realize. We had a double thing going on here, which usually with the RE program and us, and we happened to be in here, and I didn't realize that was going to hang on so long. But anyway, that community of people, which was part UU, part community, part older, part children. We had a lot of kids here, part RE, part drumming. I mean, and then we were, you know, in connection with RE, so that was part of their community too. And I just think over the years, and more so, that there's an increasing sense of community here. And I think it really is connected to our larger community in this area.
Thank you, Pat.
Enel Forrester, Bent and I found the Unitarian Church in Cincinnati, Ohio. And we were both enthralled by the minister and by the community that they had. So when we moved to upstate New York, we asked where there were Unitarian communities at that time. And we joined. They said there was a little church in Pittsfield, Massachusetts. So we drove 30 miles every Sunday to go to Pittsfield, to Unitarian Church there. Byrne happened to end up being the president of the community there and was present when the UUs were formed. So it was, again, including and involving, expanding our Unitarian community by including the Universalists. And through the years, we had a wonderful community there in Pittsfield, even though we lived in New York State, 30 miles away at that time. And of course, when we came to Manhattan, we joined our first UU fellowship. And our boys grew up here and in the fellowship. And it was a great watching it develop. So we've been members for 62 years, but having participated in three different communities, and it is heartfelt and a joy to be this part of this community. And as Barbara pointed out, Byrne and Mark will be up on the hill, so still part of our community.
Anel and Pat, you made me think of something. I think part of, you know, friendship is a huge part, but that only comes when you're established here, right? So there's people that come here for the first or second time, and it's hard, I think, at first to, you know, you don't feel like a part of the community when you're new. And so I know we're part of, you know, we call ourselves a welcoming congregation, but I think we all need to keep our eyes open for those new people so that they can feel like we're embracing them and welcoming them in here, and then they can feel a part of it too, so that they don't decide that we're not friendly and don't want to come back. But Pat, the other night, we were here for the RE, the fun night on Friday, and we lectured the kids in the car on the way over, and we said, there's going to be a drum circle, there's sacred space, don't trample on it, you know, be respectful, and they pretty much ignored us because they were distracted. And we were a little nervous because we didn't know what to expect, but you made them feel so welcome, and it was so loud it didn't matter really, but they couldn't have disrupted you. But they came in kind of hesitantly, and not everybody, but several people, you know, handed up instruments, and they welcomed them into the circle, and they got to beat on the big drum, and I joined it too, and I was a little nervous at first because I'd never done it, but it just felt really welcoming. And so now, even though I've only done it once, I feel like maybe I've, you know, I had a little bit of that community, or maybe I'm a little bit in it. So I think the kids did too. Thanks for making everybody feel welcome.
Marilyn Caldwell. I'm from a family that is fairly large, relatively close and a lot of fun when we get together. On the other hand, I'm the outlier. I'm the person who doesn't quite fit, and I have to be careful what I say. So when I come back to this church, I realize what a relief it is, how I can let down my hair, say anything I want to say, and people might engage me in what I say and discuss it, but they don't just dismiss it out of hand. This is a wonderful place to be.
Oh, all of you make so many wonderful points. And first of all, I want to say that the story was with the children was so wonderful. And it's really heartening to see how the RE program just continues to be so much better than all of us older people tried to make it be. I mean, it's so wonderful. And this is a really meaningful program to me. When we closed our eyes, the first thing I thought of was the Unitarian group that I grew up in Cincinnati, Ohio. And it was a different church than I think you and Barron went to. But it was also a place where my family was safe to express ourselves. And we probably stayed at least an hour with no refreshments afterwards in a smoke-filled room. And even as a child, listening to the adults talk was absolutely riveting. And the variety of people we met from all walks of life and all professions and all former religious backgrounds was fascinating. And then I also live in a fantastic neighborhood, the Eugene Field neighborhood. That has been a wonderful neighborhood for me, and the many Unitarians live there, and that over the years. This is a very fluid community, and I can just think of so many people I've known and loved who've passed through here and are already gone to far corners of the world. And the third community that has been the most lasting for me is this one. And my husband and I have been going here for a little over 30 years. And I value most. Friendship is absolutely priceless, but also a place for learning and growth. And the most meaningful thing I ever picked up was from a Sunday school kit that said Unitarians believe people grow and change their whole lives. And the trust that people have given me to do responsible positions when I felt a little inside and stupid, I'm still amazed. But every struggle, even down to clearing up the grounds, which was the twinkiest job I could think of to pick at this stage of my life, I have so much fun with the people I work with, and I learn a lot about nature and people and personalities. And then another incredible thing that's happened in this group, almost every social action thing that happens in this community, demonstration against the Iraq War, working to get a diversity coordinator at the high school, which they now gave up, working to get the Ten Commandments on a non-public site, so many other things I can mention. Unitarians always made up a very, even though we're a small percentage of this community, Unitarians have always been active in issues in the community and not afraid to speak out. And that has always been very heartening to me.
We have time for one more thought. Well, I think I saw Bryce's here first. He's already done a lot of talking today.
The ripples of community go wide, and we know that we aren't just part of a very isolated community here in any aspect of where we are. 2 weeks ago yesterday, Shirley and I were in Buffalo, New York, and went to a local farmer's market in the middle of a residential area, probably comparable in size to the one we have here, but the fruits and vegetables were three times the size. They were really, truly bunion size. Eavesdroppers as we are, we listen to two ladies talking nearby, and somehow the word Unitarian came up. We listened further when they were talking about their minister, how much they didn't like him or something of that sort, and what the program was going to be on Sunday. So Shirley went over and introduced us to these ladies and said, "We're Unitarians from Manhattan, Kansas." And one of them said, "Oh, yeah. Manhattan, Kansas, the home of Kansas State." And said, I grew up in Kansas City. But immediately we would have this bond of all being Unitarians. Instant community occurred on that spot because of those interests. And that goes on everywhere, all over the world. There's just so little that sets human beings apart that we should all pay attention to what communities of all sizes mean.
Thank you all for sharing your very, very compelling thoughts with us this morning. Please rise as you are willing and able for our closing hymn, 323, Break Not the Circle, hymn number 323. Please remain standing for the closing words. As an expression of our community, I invite you to hold hands with the people on either side of you. You can reach across the aisle. That's all right. Please reach across the aisle. Our time in this place may have ended, but our connection to each other and this community remains. Together, may we walk the path of justice, speak the words of love, live the selfless deed, trod gently upon the earth, and fill the world with compassion. Go in peace.